Christine Dean, and I'm just excited because we have a fun Live from Studio A session to kick off here. And joining us today, we have three guys known for their great guitar playing. We have Matt Sowell, we have Michael Wool, and we have, of course, Charlie Parr, everybody knows. And welcome, guys.
Thank you.
And Charlie, you kind of put this show together that's happening at the Red Herring Lounge tonight, right?
Oh, I did, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'm not much of a putter together, which unfortunately people learn after they agreed to be put together that I don't have the skills in that direction at all. But, yeah, I invited these fine fellows up to play.
And you are from various places. Now, Matt, you're in the Twin Cities right now. You're originally from the Philly area, though, right?
Yeah, I grew up in Philadelphia and lived in Fishtown for a good while, and then we decided to move out here for a better education for our kids.
Okay. And how's that going?
That's going awesome.
All right. I'm glad to hear it. Minnesota, great education. That's good to know. Matt, we're going to start with you. You guys have a show tonight at the Red Herring Lounge, and it starts at 8 o'clock, right, Charlie?
That's right.
All right. And so, Matt, why don't you get started with a tune, and we'll talk a little bit afterwards. What do you want to start with?
That's a good question. I'll start with this song is called Hoppin' on a Leg.
That is Matt Sowell, live from Studio A. And Matt, you are a fan of the American primitive guitar style and some of the people that... Now, Jack Rose is one of them, right?
Absolutely.
Somebody that's influenced you?
Jack
Was he from Philadelphia too? Was that?
He's originally from Fredericksburg, Virginia, okay. But then he lived in Fishtown, in Philly, and I really, really appreciated everything that he did for us in the music scene there. Jack, words can't even encompass just the amount that he did for us musically there. I did get when I first met Jack, I met him in a coffee shop, and he was kind of having a Jack moment where he was kind of being grumpy with the guy in front of me, and I was working on a job kind of next door to him, and he just kind of was like shaking his head, and we both kind of were curmudgeons together at that, and just kind of had a good laugh together, and I didn't know him as the guitarist that he was, and then I got some friends of mine were playing, and Jack opened for them. And then when I saw Jack play, it just blew me away. And I don't know, just set me on the path that I'm at. And I don't know, Jack, if you're out there, we do miss you. And thanks for everything that you did for us.
And he passed away much too young back in 2009. Is that right?
Yeah, he passed away at 38.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but left quite a legacy behind, very influential on guitar players, from what I understand. Now, tell me about the instrument that you're playing. It's quite beautiful and unusual looking to my eyes anyway. Tell me about that.
The instrument that I'm playing is called a Weisenborn, and the one that I'm playing right now is a custom Weisenborn that my mentor made for me back home, and it's Redhead Instruments, and the maker there, the luthier, is his name's Nevin Foz, and I was starting to gain some acclaim back home, and he asked what I needed from him because he was an instrument maker, and said, "Hey, what do you need?" And I said, "I need a good Weisenborn that I can tour with." And he said, "Okay, this isn't a mandolin, but I'm gonna make one for you," and he did, and he built this beautiful Weisenborn for me to play.
And what is a Weisenborn exactly? Explain that to us.
A Weisenborn is it's a guitar, but it sits on your lap, and then it's got a square neck that runs all the way through the headstock up to the head nut, and it's hollow the whole way through. So there's a lot of frequencies and harmonics that come up and come out of the instrument that you wouldn't normally get with just like a solid wood neck guitar, even like a solid square neck lap steel isn't going to give you the same kind of tonalities that you get out of a Weisenborn.
Okay. And you were working with him as a carpenter, right?
Yep.
And was that just regular carpentry or building instruments or what?
So Nevin's dad was an instrument maker, and but Nevin ended up working in the trades as a carpenter and took me on as an apprentice, and really, really showed me the value in apprenticeship and taught me how to not just like, to use a really old metaphor, the fishing metaphor of like, give a man a fish and he eats for a day, but show a man how to fish and he can eat for the rest of his life. And that's what he did. He gave me the wherewithal and the abilities to use carpentry tools, and I'm a proud member of local 322 in Minneapolis, a union member, union carpenter.
Mm-hmm. Well, and he also taught you a lot about music along the way, it sounds like.
Absolutely.
So tell me about that.
So we would be on the job sites, and we started talking about guitar, and I said I played guitar. And he said, "Hey, have you listened to Mississippi John Hurt and Bucca White?" And started getting me on to this whole path of an alternating thumb bass note. And I started seeing that and hearing that. And so listening to Mississippi John Hurt with him in his pickup truck, and listening to Bucca White, and just any old time player that he could scrounge up, I was just soaking this in. It was just great to be with someone that had such a vested interest to pass this wealth of history onto me. I mean, I was 21 at the time, so it's just kind of a huge blessing to have someone like that in my life that really mentored me, not only on the job site, but off the job site, and just put me on a different path than what I was on.
Now, and I don't remember if you said, was he a guitarist as well?
He is a guitarist.
Oh, he is a guitarist.
Too.
Okay, great. So, yeah, so he really kind of influenced you in both ways. That's wonderful.
Yep.
All right. Well, Charlie, we're going to move on to you. Did you have anybody in like that in your life, somebody that was when you were 21 years old or super young that kind of steered you in that direction?
Yeah, well, when I was real young, it was mostly my dad and his weird record collection that got me into this stuff. And, you know, he was just real passionate about music generally. And so it's like, you know, it's like any you get started on something, you start leaning towards other things. By the time I got out of Austin and moved to moved to Minneapolis first, and I spent some time that, like, the second week I was in Minneapolis, I had gotten to go see Spider John Kerner, and you know, that kind of, I was off and running after that. I learned a lot from Spider John, and his influence continues to, you know, to get at me still. But it, you know, it's like it's you know, it's any time you start stepping in those little streams, you know, if you're interested, you can find the bigger, the more of it, you know. And I've continued to do that. Nowadays it's kind of you know, I've been trying to play guitar since I was about 7 and listening to music since I was a baby, you know, because of my dad. But now I'm lucky enough to get to experience, you know, music that a lot of people don't get to hear, you know, unfortunately, like, you know, like, well, these guys, I hope more people get to hear them. But I just got back from a tour where I got to play a show with Richard Dawson, not the television
game show host and actor,
but a young man from Northumberland, England, and was absolutely astounded and grateful, I guess, that someone out there is taking music in such an interesting direction. So, you know, a lot of the stuff that I've been into lately has been stuff that a lot of people don't have access to, and maybe sometime they will. I don't know. You know, I'm actually a supporter of things like YouTube and Bandcamp and stuff like that that a lot of older people don't trust, but I think it started to give us back some of our lost oral tradition, you know, in a lot of ways. It's accessible. Mm-hmm. And music's supposed to be accessible, you know.
And I've heard that a lot, you know. You say, well, you know, do you, you know, I know you have a lot of 78s and old records and things, but then you talk to people nowadays and you say, well, where did you learn this music? Oh, YouTube.
Sure.
I was watching this great stuff on YouTube, and it hadn't occurred to me. Yeah, that's kind of the modern way to access. I mean, you can still do it both ways.
Well, yeah, I mean, and music's going to bend and change and grow, and, you know, a lot of people are grumbling about it, but music's not going to be hurt by it. You know, those of us who are passionate to play are going to play no matter what. You know, you might have carpentry work done in your house by someone like Matt, who you would never know is a passionate fingerstyle guitar player when he's not doing carpentry, and that's fine, you know. I don't happen to have a job right now, but I'm not afraid to get one if I need to get one, and when that happens, I'm still going to play the guitar every minute I get,
mm-hmm.
you know, so.
I think you do have a job, Charlie, but
I don't dare
music,
call it
music's
a job.
Not
this
a job.
Is too good to be a job.
Well, it's wonderful.
I had a job for a while. I did not enjoy it.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's wonderful to have something you feel that way about. What do you want to play for us? You've got the National out, which always makes me happy.
It makes me happy, too. I'll play, this is called I Ain't Dead Yet. This is I wrote this in dedication to the great Doc Boggs.
Funeral road, Lord, I'll be dressed up fine. I'ma have me a nice new suit and tie, you know, that never I could have afforded when I was alive. I ain't dead yet, let me wear that suit right now. Ain't nobody gonna see it when I'm locked in that box underneath the ground. Lord, flowers now. When I go down that funeral road, Lord, there's gonna be a big old band. And I gotta play all my favorite songs while they plant me in the sand. Lord, I ain't dead yet. Let me hear that music now. There ain't no way I'm gonna hear it when I'm locked in that box underneath the ground. Lord, I ain't dead yet. Give me my flowers now. I go down that funeral road, everybody's gonna have nice things to say. They're gonna say, well, he was sure a good egg. Yeah, he didn't even really feel that way. Well, I ain't dead yet. Tell me what you think right now. You can't look me in the eye when I'm locked in that box underneath the ground. Lord, I ain't dead yet. My flowers now. When I go down that funeral road, there's gonna be flowers everywhere. All my friends are gonna send some just to show how much they care. Well, I ain't dead yet. Let me see them flowers. Can't smell them from that box underneath the ground. Lord, I ain't dead yet. Give me my flowers now. Lord, I ain't dead yet. Give me my flowers now. Lord, I ain't dead
Charlie Parr, live from Studio A, and that's the title tune from his recent EP, I Ain't Dead Yet.
That's right.
And yeah, with the wonderful artwork. I mean, the music's great, but the artwork,
Shauna
Charlie.
Shauna Gilmore painted that beautiful picture of my big tree head.
With
the
animals.
Deer sticking out of my ear. It's beautiful.
It is. It's so cool. And it's a great EP as well. So that's your most recent thing that you've put out, right?
Yeah. That's the most recent thing. I'm working on some new stuff. I've got about 3/4 of the new record kind of done, and it's going really well from my point of view. I've just got to figure out where to record it, and it won't be recorded until at least January because I'm on the road until Christmas right now. So,
And last time when you did, I'm blanking on the name of the album, but the one that you did with Phil Cook.
Stump Jumper,
yeah, that's it. You did that one out of state for the first time. Are you thinking back in?
I really enjoyed that experience. And it's funny because, you know, the area around the Triangle, the Hillsboro, North Carolina is where we were at, around Raleigh-Durham, is beautiful, and a lot of it reminds me a little bit of, like, you know, this part of Minnesota. But I think you know, going that far away to do something like that has got its own kind of challenges to me, you know. And when I went out there to do that, I, you know, Phil is from Wisconsin, the engineer was from Wisconsin, there was a couple of guys out there from that region, but it was kind of a, you know, I probably could have done the whole thing here, you know. In a lot of ways, the where you're at doesn't have a whole lot to do with much of anything. And I record in barns and storefronts and basements, and so, you know, I'm not looking for a specific studio. So
right.
I don't know. I was thinking about finding someone who's got one of those old Winnebagos, you know, and just getting a microphone and just going traveling, you know. Then I could go places and visit people and record songs in the Winnebago, and just maybe just never stop. I don't know. I don't know where I'm going.
Refresh my memory. Was that Stump Jumper experience? Was that a studio experience? Which I know is not your favorite thing, but
no. That was part of a repurposed barn.
Okay,
it was an
right.
old tobacco farm
right.
that had been bought up by this family, and they just kind of repurposed the outbuildings. There was a sewing center. There's a textile building that they had made. They had a library. The main barn had been turned into a music venue kind of dance hall. And we actually recorded the record in what would have been kind of the equipment room in the back that was now kind of a lounge green room area.
Mm-hmm.
But it still looked pretty barnish.
Mm-hmm.
And it was beautiful. You know, we just stayed right out there for 3 or 4 days. And the whole record took an afternoon to do just because, you know, there's not much to it. But I don't know. It was a beautiful setting.
Okay. Well, good. Well, moving on to Michael here. Hi, Michael.
Hi.
Who's been sitting patiently over here listening and enjoying.
Well, it's easy with these guys playing.
Well, and I forgot to ask, how did you guys all get to know each other? Just from being musicians on the similar kind of scene?
Yeah, I saw Charlie playing in Seattle, and we've kept in touch since. I opened for him back in March or April, I think. And Matt and I got in touch online, just from knowing people in common and, you know, being into similar kinds of music. So yeah, it's actually I met Matt for the first time this morning when he picked me up to come up here. So it's kind of funny.
So before that, it had been an internet relationship.
Yeah, that's right. And that's, you know, one of the things that I find so fun about this sort of thing is, you know, you kind of meet people through a friend or common interest. And then all of a sudden you find yourself in a place you've never been before. And it's all because of that. I've never been to Duluth before today. So, you know, it's...
Well, welcome.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
And you're originally from Chicago, now based out in Seattle. You've been out there a while, right?
10 years, yeah.
Oh, okay. And before the session here, you were talking a little bit about venues there that you play. Tell me about the opportunities for this kind of music that you... And you do you still do other kinds of music, too? Or do you primarily...
I have played a lot of other things. While I was in Seattle, I was playing in a rock band for a while called Mystery Ship. And, you know, we played all over and toured the West Coast and Western United States. But these days, I'm pretty much just doing this. You know, I find chances to play and jam with friends and former bandmates and things like that. But I spend most of my time playing solo these days. And, yeah, some of the venues don't cross over so well, you know, with my old rock band and, you know, what I'm doing now. But some of them, you know, you'd be surprised. There's a lot of places to play in Seattle. It's got a really rich music community. And so, you know, people are supportive. It's a nice place. And I know a lot of really talented people out there. And I have fun out there. But it's nice to be somewhere different, too. You know, just seeing what the whole world has to offer as far as that goes.
And what was your door into American primitive guitar?
When I moved out to Seattle, I had been playing in bands in Chicago, and all of a sudden I didn't have anyone to play with anymore because I didn't know anybody. And so, yeah, I started digging up, you know, records in that vein, John Fahey records and Leo Kottke records, things like that, as well as, you know, a lot of the same country blues guys that, you know, Matt was talking about, John Hurt in particular. And just, that's great music to play. You can accompany yourself. You don't need a band. So I spent a lot of time, you know, kind of going down that road and digging back into that history. And that history is just such a rich one that there's a lot to be learned from it. And it kept me going and introduced me to some, you know, contemporary players like, you know, the gentleman I'm sitting with now. And, you know, it's been a cool ride so far.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. And there was something on your website I was reading. I think it was, you know, some of the press quotes and things. And they were talking about, you know, listening to you and how you were kind of expanding beyond the limitations of the genre. So that made me curious about what the limitations of the genre might be.
Right. I guess what and I then, think I most obviously would say is I don't think you're an American primitive guitarist in the, you know, proper noun sense if you sing. But... or at least that seems to be how people on the internet define it. So yeah, you know, I sing and I don't always do that instrumental stuff. I kind of got my start doing that as a solo artist because I found it was really easy to, you know, start. I sang in my rock band, but it's different when you're playing with a full band and, you know, it's loud in there and, you know, it's a lot more hollering than it is singing. So, you know, I took time to kind of try and develop a sound and, you know, the skills of playing in a totally different capacity and singing along with that. And one of the ways I was able to do that was starting with the instrumental styles, you know, the real American primitive stuff you think of when you hear a guy like, you know, John Fahey or Peter Lang, you know, those cats. So it kind of just caused me to rethink my approach to guitar playing when there's, you know, not a full band behind you to kind of catch you and, you know, cover up when you screw up too. So I guess that was kind of my gateway into that. And I just was, you know, cautious too about how I knew that I wanted to sing and play with other musicians too. And, you know, if you go out too hard saying, you know, I'm an American primitive guitarist, you know, people come into that expecting something very specific. And if you don't do that, you know, people sometimes don't know what to think of that. So I tread lightly with that.
It's almost like the bluegrass people, you know, there's the hardcore traditionalists and then the kind yeah. of people that are kind of expanding and might have, you know, percussion or...
Yeah, you know, it means something very specific to a very specific crowd of right. people. And, you know, I thought it was interesting that I heard, you know, Gillian Welch call her and Dave Rawlings music American primitive music. And I was like, yeah, why not? You know, it's the same spirit. And that's, I think, what kind of moves me is, you know, the spirit behind it, not necessarily any particular rigidness to a given style. I've played a lot of my life just doing one specific style with one specific group, and for some reason or another, none of those projects are still playing anymore. So I thought maybe I'd stop setting those kind of boundaries.
So how would you describe the American primitive spirit that you talked about? Like, what is that spirit? Putting you on the spot.
Yeah, well, here. That's a great question and something that I thought a lot about recently, putting together kind of a reunion set of gigs for three guitarists who were on Fahey's Tacoma Records, Peter Lang, Toulouse Englehart, and Rick Ruskin. And, you know, those guys also, you know, kind of move beyond the constraints of whatever that label might mean. But I think it's just kind of, you hear it, and I don't know, I think primitive is kind of an unfair word because it implies unskilled to some people. But I think it's got a rawness to it. And I think that denotes a certain passion that you don't see with, you know, kind of a more sort of pop-focused, you know, styles of, you know, folk music. And when you listen to those old records from the 20s and 30s, there's a lot of gnarliness to those sounds. You know, they're not easy listening music. And I think that's kind of what it means to me is that, you know, you're not afraid to put out on the line, like, what you have, and you're not trying to present it as anything other than what it is. You know, you're not going to be dressing it up. You're not going to auto-tune that. or I guess if you would, it would sound kind of funny, I suppose. So I guess, you know, I grew up playing a lot of punk music, and so that was one of the things that I found when I started getting more into acoustic music, that in that old, you know, blues, country, and folk stuff, there's a lot of that same spirit where, you know, doesn't matter if the person singing is got the best voice in the world. It matters what they're saying when they're singing and, you know, how much they believe in what they're saying and how much they can make you believe in it, too. And, you know, I have to, of course, tip my hat to, you know, my new home of Seattle is also kind of carrying that standard with all the music that's come out of there. You know, it's about what you're doing and how you're doing it. And I guess that's kind of what that whole label means to me. And that's a label I'm okay with.
All right. With that, let's hear a song. What do you want to play?
All right, well, I'm going to play a song that I learned off of, you know, Charlie played for Doc Boggs, and this is from a Doc Watson record. I never got the chance to see Doc. Matt said he did, but this is one of my favorite tunes by him. It's Deep River Blues. Let it rain, let it pour, let it rain a whole lot more, 'cause I got them deep river blues. Let the rain drive right on, oh, let the waves sweep along, 'cause I got them deep river blues. My old gal's a good old pal, and she looks like a waterfowl when I get them deep river blues. Ain't no one to cry for me, and the fish all go out on a spree when I get them deep river blues. Give me back my old boat, well I'm gonna sail her if she float, cause I got them deep river blues. I'm going down to Muscle Shoals, the times are better there I'm told, when I got them deep river blues. And if my boat sinks with me, well I'll go down then, don't you see, when I get them deep river blues. Now I'm gonna say goodbye, and if I sink, just let me die, cause I got them deep river blues. Let it rain, let it pour, let it rain a whole lot more, cause I got them deep river blues. Let the rain drive right on, oh, let the waves sweep along, cause I got them deep river blues. Yes, I got them deep river blues.
That is Michael Wohl live from Studio A today in Deep River Blues there.
Deep River Blues, Doc Watson.
Doc Watson.